We will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We have three bills on our agenda, so we'll just start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2476. Christine.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2476 would remove the requirement that a county assessor submit the table of income approach factors used to arrive at farmland special assessment to a county board of review. This board has been used extensively in some counties, and some counties find the process very useful. Other counties have had difficulty even convening a board or finding people willing to serve on the board. This bill comes from the Government Efficiency Task Force, chaired by Representative Nathanson, that was established in House Bill 2920 in 2009. And this is one of the recommendations of the task force to increase efficiency and eliminate the county board of review in counties that don't currently use it. There is no revenue impact of this measure and a minimal expenditure impact.
Okay, and for one of the first times since I've been chairing this committee, not one living soul has signed up for or against it. Did you want to talk on it? You need to sign up if you want to talk in this committee. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I apologize for that. I think I'm having something happening in my brain. I thought I was here a week or so ago and we presented the testimony on this, so I didn't sign up today, but I might have been in the House committee, so things happen sometimes very fast.
Well, this is signed up for public hearing, so I assume we haven't heard it before. We did hear a couple of other of Representative Nathanson, so maybe that.
Okay, so anyway, my name is John Phillips. I'm with the Department of Revenue, and this bill, again, as Christine said, was that came out of the House Bill 2920 Task Force. That was a task force set up to look at efficiencies in local governments and state government interactions, and this bill just came as a result of that, along with four or five other bills relating to the property tax system. The Farm Board is just a local board that's called together to provide information on the, sort of the income generated from various farm values that are specially assessed, and so counties have been using farm boards to the extent they can. In recent years, they have not had the ability to really get people to serve in many cases. Some counties have no problem. Many counties have a difficult time getting anyone to serve. Now, that alone isn't a reason to make a change necessarily, but this bill would make it permissive. The original concept was just to eliminate the requirement, but some counties and their farm boards wanted the ability to meet and to discuss and to work through these issues, and so that's why the bill says may instead of shall or completely eliminates it. What the assessors are needing is to establish the specially assessed values on these farmlands, and in order to do that, they need to determine sort of what the crops are in the area in the county, and what is the income generated on those crops, and sort of, or if the farmer's leasing land, how much is that generating, and then that gives them a sense of the value, and then they plug that into formulas, and they do extensive analysis on these income and rents, and then produce values. No one in anyone's memory that we've talked to among the counties or the farm folks has ever recalled anyone appealing any one of these values, whether there was a board or not a board. So it doesn't seem to be a real issue out there. And so we met with the Farm Board Bureau, the Farm Bureau. We worked with them on the House side, and they didn't express any concern whatsoever, and there was no opposition testimony.
Okay, sounds like a good government measure. Any questions for Mr. Phillips? Senator Morse.
Thank you. I'm wondering, to what degree would the findings, say, in Marion County be transferable to Linn County? And I'm wondering if there's any attempt by county assessors to share that information where they may have convened a board and in a county that hasn't.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, there are meetings among the sort of individuals in the assessor's office that are assigned to work the farmland areas, rural areas, and they're out there talking with farmers, looking at land, checking leases and rents, and they have groups that meet statewide or regionally that talk among themselves and sort of share information. We have had, until very recently, a specialist in our department that coordinates a lot of that and is kind of an expert in the farm area. He just recently retired, but historically that's been the case, is that they do share information. I've also heard from assessors that talk about quite stark differences between sort of the agricultural picture among counties. Some, you know, there's hops in one county and melons in another, and you know, it does vary quite widely. But I do know that they do converse on that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else want to talk on this? Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2476 and open a work session on House Bill 2476. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2476 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2476 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Please mark Senator Telfer as excused. Okay, now we will open a public hearing. Oh, a carrier. In view of his intense interest in the subject, we will ask Senator Morris to carry this.
Another one of these difficult carries.
Okay, now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3368. Christine.
House Bill 3368 is another one of the recommendations that came out of the Government Efficiency Task Force. It would eliminate explicit requirements for the Oregon Department of Revenue to mail hard copies of approvals of district descriptions and maps to the county assessors. And for the assessors to mail hard copies of forms for property tax returns to the owners of property. These returns would be obtained through the county assessor's offices, but they won't have the opportunity to actually mail, or have the requirement that they actually mail them. There are a number of requirements for the Oregon Department of Revenue to provide public notice in a newspaper when the assessment rolls are publicly reviewed each year, and this would eliminate that requirement. Also, there are a number of reporting requirements for owners of land that's specially assessed as open space or riparian lands to use registered or certified mail to report on the use of these lands if such a report is requested. And also, this measure would also eliminate the newspaper notice of property tax appeals hearings or refunds of unused special tax revenue. And there is a revenue impact of no, there's a finding of no revenue impact this measure, and there's a savings to the Department of Revenue and counties of approximately $18,000 per biennium in 11-13 and 13-15 due to the elimination of these requirements.
Okay. Did you get any testimony from newspapers who were concerned when it was over in the House? Is this our sign up? No, that's not.
No, Madam Chair, we did not receive any testimony from newspapers. It would just be a small ad related to these property tax appeals hearings, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in outside parties attending these hearings. The persons who are involved directly in the hearing or have a stake in it are notified separately and not through that newspaper article. That was just for the public.
Okay. All right. John Phillips?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips for the Department of Revenue. Thank you for hearing this bill. This is a bill, again, from the work group, and it took a look at eliminating some of the hard copy notices that we provide and also moving some notices to maybe a more efficient and at least more effective method. Sometimes we found in these the statutes were more prescriptive of how to notice rather than making sure that we were effectively notifying people. And so it is a kind of a long bill with a number of sections, and I can go through all of those right now if you'd like.
I don't think that'll be necessary. I think the summary was good, unless a member of my committee would like to have a section by section. I see passivity here. So just summarize any highlights that you wish to.
Okay, I can give you a couple of examples, and at least four of these situations, there's sort of a general public notice that just says, oh, by the way, this entity will be meeting. And as staff indicated, that notice is sent specifically to the people who have either appealed and are coming in for that meeting. They get direct notice, and that's typically the case. So if we're producing a value information for a company, and they say, we would like a meeting with the director, we send them notice of the date and time of the meeting, and then they can come and meet with the director and discuss before their value is finalized. That's all standard. There's this additional requirement that's very old, a carryover from many, many years ago, that says that we will publish in the state capital three consecutive weekly notices that says, oh, and by the way, we're going to be reviewing values of these companies. And again, no one has ever come to those meetings, and we meet from June 15th through July 31st. No one from the public has ever come. The companies come and discuss their values, but so the value of that notice we thought was just sort of a general FYI out there, and so we just haven't ever seen the value of that.
But if there were a member of the public who, for whatever reason, were interested in it, is there some way they can arrange to get notified within this bill?
Within this bill, no. But if they contacted us and asked us to attend, we would give them the time frames of the meeting, absolutely.
Right. And I imagine most places have websites that would mention these.
We do have a website that mentions it, and also the statutes specify the dates of the meetings. Mm-hmm. So they're all in the law.
Okay. All right. Questions from the committee? No questions. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to talk on this? Okay, close the public hearing on House Bill 3368. Senator Morris.
Open
a work session on House Bill 3368. That's a good thing to do.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3368 to the floor with a do-fast recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 3368 to the Senate floor with a do-fast recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Hass, would you like to carry this?
I'd be so honored.
You would be honored, for the record. Okay, now we will have open a public hearing on House Bill 2354.
House Bill 2354 would extend the sunset on property tax exemption for nonprofits that either own or lease rental housing for low-income residents. The sunset in this measure would be extended from July 1st, 2014 to July 1st, 2027 for the property tax exemptions. There is a finding of no expenditure impact, and the revenue impact is a loss of $7.15 million in 2013-15 when the sunset would become active, and a shift of $1.5 million in that same time frame for property tax revenues.
Okay, we have signed up Dick Anderson, the mayor of Lincoln City.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and committee. My name is Dick Anderson. I'm the mayor of Lincoln City. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2354. Lincoln City is a community on the Central Oregon coast whose major industry is tourism. Our population is approximately 8,000, with a service area population of 15,000. And a summer season population that grows to over 30,000. Because we are a tourism community, we employ heavily in the support service industry, which generally pays minimum wage, thus contributing greatly to Lincoln County's median income being one of the lowest in the state. At the same time, our housing costs are high due to the demand for the natural beauty of our area. Second homes and homes used as nightly rentals have contributed to the dramatic increase in housing prices due, again, to the demand of the scenic coastal location. In Lincoln City, we have a housing gap, or better noted as the inability of our workforce to afford housing in our community, thus contributing to numerous social issues along with workforce concerns. Workforce affordable housing remains a primary need in our community, even in today's economic climate. Lincoln City has previously chosen to take advantage of the tools provided in ORS 307, which allows local government to exempt affordable housing properties from paying property taxes, thereby lowering rents to make housing accessible to more community members. We appreciate this local government option that allows us, the local government, at a local level, to assess our needs and to make it a solution, to match it with a solution. As in this case, to totally give up cherished income to a city to facilitate the delivery of a much-needed product, affordable workforce housing for our citizens. Lincoln City is one of the few communities outside the Portland metropolitan area that has embraced and utilized this tool. We have chosen to exercise this option as a local government to facilitate the existence of six properties representing 283 rental units. These properties provide affordable housing in our community to a segment of our workforce that would not generally realize such. And still, we have a need. In fact, we are also supporting and facilitating the efforts of a local land trust option that would allow citizens to the opportunity to purchase a home, thus stabilizing their housing situation even further and rooting them more firmly in the community. Hopefully, you are agreeing with my comments this afternoon and recognize the need, but are asking yourself the question, why deal with this issue now? This committee certainly has larger issues at hand, and that is correct. However, the extension of this sunset to 2027 allows communities like Lincoln City to plan ahead, as well as to provide some predictability for those partners we find that are willing to assist us in filling the gap of affordable housing need. I strongly request and urge your support and passage of House Bill 2354 so that local governments can better utilize the few tools we have to meet the needs of our citizens and communities. Thank you for your time and the service to the citizens of Oregon.
Questions? Senator Morrison?
Thank you. What's the process you use to make sure that the tax benefit flows through to the rent charge?
Madam Chairman, Senator, the building, in most cases, it's a new construction, and we're working with the folks, certainly, upfront through our planning departments and all the processes, and then are constantly monitoring their activity in our community. We know in this case, these six properties, their rent rolls. Since they're filling a need that we've identified and encouraging, we're all over them. Would be the answer, a real hands-on. So we see the rents lowering.
Just as a follow-up question, do you look at the financial statements for the project?
I have not and have not. So I would assume, and maybe some of the other testimony could better answer those kind of questions of what a developer or a nonprofit has to actually go through. To answer the, so I apologize for not knowing the specifics.
Well, yeah, thank you. Just personally, I would like to make sure that this tax benefit accrues to the renters.
Right. Isn't this mostly nonprofits that does
correct
sort of thing?
Okay, for a nonprofit.
Yeah. Okay. And to your knowledge, are there any for-profit companies that do this, or do they have to be a nonprofit to qualify?
Again, it'd be, Madam Chairman, it'd be technical questions that probably okay.
We'll wait for the next panel. I believe that's the case, but we'll wait for the next panel.
They do have to qualify as a
nonprofit.
Nonprofit, yes.
Okay. All right. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we will bring up a panel of Dee Walsh, Janet Bird, and Martha McLennan.
Hello, I'm Dee Walsh. I'm the Executive Director of Reach Community Development, which is a nonprofit housing development and property management organization. We're based in Portland and work throughout the metro area. I'm here today also representing Oregon On, which is the association of 37 nonprofit housing developers in the state of Oregon who have developed about 16,000 units of housing. And just to quickly address the questions from earlier, you do have to be a nonprofit under this statute to qualify. And we have to do income certification of our residents every year to make sure that we're serving the folks intended. And if their income rises, the exemption no longer applies to them. And so it's watched very closely. And when we do the development of the project, we have to show the rents that we're charging and the expenses and what difference it makes not to have to pay the property taxes.
Before you leave that point, how do you, if you have an individual tenant, how do you take the exemption away from them?
We have to pay taxes on that percentage of the property that they live in based on a square footage of the ratio between where they live and the whole property. And we can raise their rent some, but usually their income is only slightly over the 60% of median family income limit. So we don't get to fully compensate ourselves for the additional property taxes that we pay normally. But very few of our residents do go over income. In our mixed-use buildings that have commercial as part of it, we do pay property taxes on the commercial portion. So the property tax exemption is critically important for nonprofit housing developers. In REACH's portfolio, over 1,300 of our units that we've developed qualify for this. And of those, about a third of the residents are disabled, a third are elderly, and over 60% are very low income, which means they have incomes below 30% of median income. To date, four jurisdictions in the state have adopted the ordinance, the City of Portland, Wilsonville, Tigard, and as you heard from the mayor, Lincoln City. Because of their adoption of this local tool, 9,200 households get the benefit of lower rents, which means about, on average, $50 a month less on rent for them. And that means that they have more money for food and essential supplies and medical expenses. As I mentioned earlier, the property tax exemption is monitored annually. It requires annual certification, and they watch that very closely. There are two other jurisdictions who are considering adopting this tool, both Washington County and the City of Bend, and so they would like this to pass so that they have the option to use the tool in the future. And as Mayor Anderson said, one of the reasons why it's important to pass this extension now is that when you're developing affordable housing, you generally have to start planning the project several months and oftentimes a couple years before you pull together all the financing to start construction. And so knowing that you'll have that exemption available to you is really critical in planning for the future. So even though 2014 may seem like a long time away, it's for new housing development, it's right around the corner. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take the next.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Martha McLennan. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Housing Alternatives. We're also a nonprofit developer of affordable housing here in Oregon with offices in Milwaukee. Our mission is to create opportunity through housing, and we believe that housing creates the opportunities for security, for stability, and provides the foundation for families to thrive. We serve 2,500 people every night with a safe place to call home. That's in 16 Oregon counties in almost 1,600 units. What I've had the clerk there pass out is a couple of kind of illustrations of two properties that use this property tax exemption program. One is the Autumn Park Apartments in Wilsonville. This was a property originally built in 1988 and then rehabilitated in 2004. In this property, we have a lot of folks, a lot of kids, 219 adults, 178 children. The average household income in that property is just about $2,000 a month, which is 38% of the area median income. And a third of the residents there have lived there more than 3 years, so it's a fairly stable community. Many of those residents are in the workforce. 72% of the residents have their income and come from employment. So they are folks at entry-level employment or part-time employment, by and large. In this particular case, the property tax exemption reduces the rent almost $70 a month. So you can see how important that is for those families. The other property I wanted to highlight is Creekside Woods. This is also in Wilsonville and was just completed this last year. It provides 84 homes for independent seniors. The average age of residence at a senior property now starts out at about 71 years of age. 85% of our residents in senior properties are single women, and the average income is about $1,100 per month. In this case, the estimated property tax, the estimated rent reduction for the property tax exemption is about $40 a month. This property tax exemption is just one of the many tools that we use to make housing affordable, and is a very important component. It provides a direct benefit from the exemption passing through all the way to the resident. So I urge you to support the extension.
Thank you. Janet.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Janet Bird, and I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships, and I convene the Housing Alliance, which is a coalition, a statewide coalition of organizations that are concerned about housing needs in our communities and tools and strategies to build affordable housing. And we're very much in support of House Bill 2354. I won't read my testimony, and I don't want to be repetitive. I know that you have many things to do. Just a couple things. It is this is a local option, so it's state enabling statute that allows local communities to set up programs that are going to meet the needs. The monitoring and other kinds of systems and requirements vary some from community to community, but it is closely monitored, and the nonprofits are expected to provide evidence that there's clear benefit to tenants in terms of rent reduction. You've heard that property taxes are this is a significant difference. $70 per unit in rent reduction was one example you heard. That's a big chunk of somebody's rent payment and of somebody's monthly income. So we do think that this, it's a significant, while it may seem like an insignificant program, it makes a real difference to the developers as well as to the residents. I guess the other thing that I would just reiterate that you heard Mayor Anderson mention is the disparity in Oregon communities between what people are making, especially folks in the service industry, and what rents cost in communities where there's a lot of demand, so particularly coastal communities, other communities. There have been a number of studies released just in the last 3 weeks that show that that is still a significant issue in Oregon. There's a real disconnect between the need for affordable rental housing and what folks can afford. So I urge your consideration and support for this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for the work you do. This is really important work in all of our communities. And just in my district, we have several which are featured in some of this material, so I appreciate it. Questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. Senator Morris?
Just to make sure that I'm reading the statute correctly and understanding it. If you have multiple taxing districts and you have the majority of 51% that have applied for the tax or utilizing the tax exempt option, then it applies to all the other taxing districts as well.
Yes, that's correct.
That's what that 50% is about.
That's correct.
51%. Yeah. Okay.
So you could get an approval from just a single jurisdiction and have that portion of the taxes reduced, or if you get to the 51%, then all of taxes become exempt.
Do you find, Madam Chair, do you find conflicts within?
You know, we haven't so far. I think, you know, Washington County now is considering a policy at the county level that would approve the exemption. So that would exempt their taxes. The developer then would need to go to the school district, the city, the fire district to kind of amass the rest of the 51% to get to the total exemption. But it would start with a policy statement at the county level that they would exempt their portion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else want to sign up for this? David?
Chair Burdick and member of the committee, or members of the committee. I'm Dave Barenberg from the City of Portland. I just wanted to briefly state our support for this program. It is an important tool in developing affordable housing. We work with our nonprofit partners, and it is something that expands the ability of providing housing for those in need and helps to address some of the housing, low-income housing issues that we have. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions? No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2354 and open a work session on House Bill 2354. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2354 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2354 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? So ordered. Please mark Senator Telfer is excused, and I will carry this bill. That completes our agenda for the day, committee, and tomorrow is a big day for all of us, a big day for Oregon. We have our forecast meeting, a joint meeting at 8 o'clock. Oh, thank heavens, 8:30. My calendar lied to me. 8:30 in the morning, and we'll see you all then, and we are adjourned. We'll see you all then, and we are adjourned. And